Mr. Tasky. The Antic Files. Episode 6.
Welcome to the 6th episode of Inversitasky, The Antic Files. I'm your host, Wade. Let's get started. This episode features Volume 1, Number 6, the February/March 1983 issue of Antic Magazine. The price was $2.50, that's $7.60 today. It was 112 pages cover to cover and had 68 advertisers. This is the 6th episode and the end of the exploratory nature of the podcast. I found that I can manage this, and I really enjoy reading and working through the content. As such, I'll be continuing the podcast at least indefinitely for now, and I'll try to keep a regular cadence as well. I will also try to get at least one normal Inversitasky episode in monthly. The cover art on this issue depicts a caveman sitting on a ledge near a cave entrance. He is actively chiseling an Atari Fuji symbol out of a rock. Behind and below him are the ground and the sea, where there are several dinosaurs roaming around. The sky in the background is pink and purplish, and there is one lone palm tree on the left-hand side. At the base of the rock his cave is in, there is a 1200 carved in stone. Presumably, this is for the Atari 1200 XL, and I'll find out soon enough. The Antic logo appears in blue with black shadow in the upper left. The word tools appears in black in the lower left. In the upper right is a diagonal black banner with white text that reads, New Atari Computer. I can't wait. I couldn't find an editorial in this issue. I have a few ads to discuss for this one. First is Microtronics, which has a full-page monochrome ad for the JoyTyper 400. This is a keyboard replacement for the Atari 400. Well, it looks like it sits on top of the 400's keyboard, so not exactly replacing it. With it, you can do everything the Atari 800 can do.
Sure.
It's a full-stroke keyboard in a color-matched metal case and connects with the ribbon cable. It's priced at $129.95, which is $395.17 today. It puts the typing height really high, in my opinion. I think your forearms will get tired very quickly as you won't be able to rest them on the desk. Next, there's an ad for Dorset Educational Systems, which has a full-page monochrome ad, and it is a complete wall of text that I won't bore you with. This is for their education system and tapes. They claim to have over 1,000 programs for the Atari. Dorset has been developing interactive learning systems since 1957. The ad gives a good full history of the company. For just $9.90, or $30.11 today, you can get one cassette with two programs from the course of your choice. You can get a full course, which is 8 tapes and 16 programs, for $59.90, or $182.15 today. And if you want 32 pre- and post-tests, a fancy binder, and full documentation with that course, it's $79. That is $240.24 today. Seeing this sparked a memory. A few years ago, Kay Savitz and Tom Cherry Holmes spearheaded a preservation project of the Dorset tapes. Kay digitized hundreds of the tapes that were given to them by Michael Current. Tom then cleaned them up to make them usable, and they were all uploaded to the Internet Archive. Tom went a few extra miles and reverse-engineered the format. He built the C library that can be used to create new tapes, as well as creating several videos on the subject, inclusive of creating the tape itself. Kay also interviewed the main people from Dorset, as well as Tom, about the project. It's a remarkable preservation project, to say the least. Links to all this are in the show notes. Next is Austin Franklin Associates, which has a full-page monochrome ad that features the Austin equation. 400 plus 150 equals 800.
How is that so?
Well, I'll tell you. You take your Atari 400, you add $150, which is $455.99 today, for the 48K Austin board, and that equals an Atari 800.
Does it though? This doesn't make up for the keyboard difference.
Agreed. You can get a 32K board for only $94.95, which is $288.74 today. Next up is Epix, which has a full-page, full-color ad for The Nightmare, which I don't ever remember seeing. Not the ad, but the game. The ad is hand-drawn, has a lady running down some castle stairs, her red hair flowing behind her, and she's screaming. It says this is a graphic adventure. The thing that made me take pause was the blurb on the bottom right corner. It says, Temple of Aspy, a fantastic roguelike, also from Epix, was the first computer game ever to win the Hobby Industry Award for Excellence. It goes on to pledge the same excellence in every game. Then it gives an excellent warranty, which they call the 30/forever warranty. In the first 30 days, they'll replace the disc due to any defect. For the forever portion, if anything happens to the disc, you can send the disc back and they'll replace it for $5. Pretty cool. The last ad I'm going to mention is from Computer Techniques, which has a quarter page ad offering a picture digitization service. Send in your picture sized no larger than 5.5 by 5.5 and you'll receive a floppy disk containing the photos and your original back. The first photo is $15, which is $45.61 today, and subsequent ones are $8 each, which is $24.33 today. I gotta say, that's kind of expensive. It does include a basic program to view the pictures and a simple paint program you can use to modify them, and your Atari must have a GTIA chip. The first feature here is Inside Atari by LaVon Mitchell. This department article appears first, presumably due to its content. This informs the reader all about the new Atari 1200XL computer, including hardware and operating system improvements. There are several pictures as well. Too bad they're all in monochrome. This is one article that would have benefited from a color splurge. Next is Valentine by Bill Lukaroth. This feature article presents a small basic type-in that uses Graphics 2 to display a heartfelt message to a loved one by using lowercase letters. The trick works for Graphics 1 as well, and in short, a single poke alters the character set location. Now, if you remember correctly, in Graphics 1 and 2, you can't print some characters because they are not mapped. A side effect of altering the character set location is that there's no space character, so you can set the color for that to black if you wish, because it's going to present as a heart. This program displays a moving banner with the message, I love you, and there are hearts all around the message that display in red. And there's a screenshot and the website. The next feature is called 10 by Jordan Powell. This feature article describes why you might want to invest in software from APX, then gives you a top 10 programs. Reason number one, it's cheaper. Reason number two, it's mostly written in BASIC, thus you can modify and study it.
The original open source?
The list created is Diskette Librarian. This was featured on InVersiTasky, Season 1, Episode 18. Database/Report System. GTIA Demo Diskette. Family Cash Flow. This was featured on InVersiTasky, Season 1, Episode 9 as Family Finances after it was picked up by Atari. Bliss, BLIS, Eastern Front 1941, Snark Hunt, Jukebox Number 1, Music Tutor, and Atari Program Text Editor. For those mentioned as having been featured on InVersiTasky, there are links in the show notes to those episodes. The next feature is Starting Line by John Lovelace. This department article informs the reader what utility programs are, and why not only programmers can benefit from using them. He then presents two useful utilities written in BASIC. One gets a disk listing, and the other is a screen editor that mimics the memo pad. He gives an explanation of how both work as well, and there are screenshots on the website. The next feature is called Pronto by Deborah Burns. This feature article discusses an online banking feature. It's called Pronto, and it's online banking. This was started in 1982 by the Chemical Bank of New York for 200 members that owned Ataris. Several other banks are piloting online banking using Pronto in 1983 as well. And customers are able to get account information, pay bills, create up to 5 different budgets with 50 line items each, get electronic statements, and send email to other Pronto users.
This will never catch on.
Fast forward to today, and these are things that we take for granted as we do much of it from our pocket phones. Chemical Bank queried its customers on what they would be willing to pay per month, and the result was $10, which is $30.41 today. And that seems a little bit high. As a side note related to this article, near the back there is an ad from the Micro Peripheral Corporation for their Micro Connection modem. It states that Citibank of New York selected the modem to be used with their home banking service. Maybe this home banking will catch on after all. Next up is Ultrasound by Tom Christian. That's K-R-I-S-C-H-A-N. This feature article shows you how to build a cable to connect your Atari to your hi-fi stereo system. Why? So you can experience explosions and phaser fire and ultrasound. You can build this with parts from Radio Shack for $7.49, which is $22.78 today. Tom is CEO of Technometrics Computer Consulting, which manufactures computer accessories. Next is Toolbox by Jerry White. This feature article is another discussion of tools. Jerry introduces you to his favorite tools after first telling you his ideal development environment, which includes an Atari 800 with 48K, an 850 interface, 2 810 drives, an Epson MX80 printer, and an Axlon RAM disk. The tools he prefers are MMG's Basic Commander, which adds some useful functions to BASIC, mainly while developing, Masher from APX, which compresses BASIC code by combining lines where possible, and changing numeric constants to variables and removing remark statements, XREF, X-R-E-F, from APX, which creates cross-references to variables and BASIC programs, Insomnia from APX, which is a sound effects generator, Atari's Music Composer for writing music and used in combination with PDI's Music Box to convert and use the composer files in your BASIC programs, InstEdit, that's I-N-S-T-E-D-I-T, from APX for character set editing, Swiftware's PM800 for editing and using player missile graphics in your BASIC programs, Artworks, A-R-T-W-O-R-X, DrawPic, and Datasoft's MicroPainter for creating playfield graphics, and finally, SynAssembler from Synapse, or for really big assembly programs using Atari's Macro Assembler and DDT, Dunyan's debugging tool. Next up is Assembly Language by Wes Newell. This department article presents an assembly program that will modify Atari DOS 2.0S such that it can accept long file names up to 27 characters in length. It reduces the maximum directory entries from 64 to 60, and formatted disks are also reduced to 700 free sectors from 707. It also allows for upper and lower case names. The drawback is that it's not compatible with normal DOS. He makes a valid point on file names with a good analogy. Wait until you have 1,000 files and need to know what the file CRCHO is. Wouldn't it be easier if we could just name it Crunch, Crumble, and Chomp with underbars between each word? He doesn't go into detail with how it works, and the source is sparsely documented.
It looks like Atari had long file name support long before Microsoft.
There is also a BASIC program to convert a disk to the new format. Wes is from Newell Industries, and you might recognize the name for some of their expansion products. Next up is Display List Simplified by Alan Moose and Marianne Lorenz. This feature article is a primer on modifying the display list in BASIC, and hopefully you can later use them in assembly. Rob from Player Missile has what I think is the definitive instruction on display list for the Atari, so don't read this, go to Rob's website. There's a link in the show notes. Should you decide to read this article, the instructions are presented very clearly in a step-by-step fashion, inclusive of non-technical steps such as deciding what you want your screen to look like and mocking it up on paper. During the tutorial, it does craft a sample custom list, and there's a screenshot on the website. Next is Dragon Smoke by Bob Albrecht and George Firedrake. This department article is part two of Wordsworth presented in the last issue. I wasn't particularly fond of the last article due to the absurdity of some of the tasks. They do mention here that they are plausible if you're snowbound for several weeks. Sure. In this article, the author's solution to the word score calculation program is presented, or at least the first part. There is also a modification presented to allow you to calculate scores for Scrabble by using the Scrabble tile values. No more having to add up the word AT in your head.
That is 2 points.
Next up is Pilot Your Atari by Ken Harms. This department article shows you how to take control of all four voices using Pilot via the equivalent of BASIC pokes. He also finds a way to get a better random number than Pilot's built-in function. If the scope isn't big enough yet, the program presented here also uses Player Missile graphics with the joystick. The article describes in detail how the sound system works, and as a bonus, he shows you Pilot's equivalent construct to the BASIC 4NIC statement. The program's quite large, and the success rate that I've had with this particular article is less than stellar, so I didn't invest the time in typing it in. I also couldn't find it archived. Next up is In the Public Domain by Mike Colvin. This department article presents a game called Stellar Defense. Mike was a high school student and submitted this game. Jerry White offered some suggestions, and Mike polished it up and resubmitted it. This is a game written in BASIC that is done in Graphic Zero and is similar in nature to Galaxian, where you have ships fly down to attack you. You can move left and right and fire a missile, and there's a defender aspect in it that if the invader gets to the bottom, it steals one of your humans, and then it zooms back up to the top. It plays some random noise on the intro. And once you start, it displays the title in Graphics 2 and rotates the colors while playing this sound. As you play, it has some nice sound effects. The only thing that I didn't like was all the enemy and player motion stops while you fire your missile. Next up is Tiny Text by Jim Carr. This feature article features a BASIC program that claims to be a cassette-based text editor. It's written by Stan Aukers and originally appeared in the ACE newsletter. It is designed to enable submission of machine-readable data to the ACE newsletter. I'm not sure I fully understand the context into how this is used and what its intended use case is exactly. I started the program and then quickly got lost in its usage, and perhaps that's because I don't have a working cassette. And it also could be that it's not fully explained in the actual article. Next is The Education article by Clyde Spencer. This department article is titled Grading on the Curve and presents a BASIC program for determining students' grades using McCall's T-scores. This normalizes all the scores for the class before comparing the class rather than an absolute curve. The article explains the math behind the system as well, and as a bonus, he presents a VisiCalc template that does the same thing. Being a productivity fan, I chose the spreadsheet route. There are screenshots and a printout on the website. Next is Tape Topics by Carl Evans. This department article is titled PACTL Poker. In this issue, he explains, in great detail, how the playback circuit of the program recorder works. As a bonus, you learn why you have to press return twice on CSave and CLoad. The first return tells the OS to accept the command, where it then jumps to the cassette handler routines. The cassette handler waits for the second return, which gives you time to prepare the tape. See, all these years you've been doing it wrong by preparing the tape first and then complaining about pressing return twice. It's this second return that activates the motor control line. He tells you how to control this motor line with a poke. And why is this useful? You want to listen to some music? A better use is to locate a program on tape when you've forgotten what counter index it's at. That's a trick I wish I'd have thought of back when I only had a cassette. Next up is C-Boot MGR by Harold Stripe. This feature article presents a basic program that is a cassette boot manager. It allows you to make backups of single-stage boot tapes and allows you to convert them to boot disks. The article explains how a boot tape works as well as boot sectors on a disk. It also explains how the Atari is able to read from tapes with slightly varied speeds successfully. The listing isn't exactly short, so set aside some time. And finally, Systems Guide by James Caporel. This department article is the continuation of the memory map. This time it finishes up page 2 addresses and starts on page 3 addresses. In the miscellany area, the new product section has a mini overview of tricky tutorials. I've been seeing a lot of these in the last couple of Antic issues, and believe it or not, I've never looked into them. They range from $20 to $30 and are available on cassette or disc. They mention 8 different tutorials: display lists, horizontal and vertical scrolling, page flipping, animation basics, player missile graphics, sound and music, disk drive utilities, and character graphics. Next, the go-to directory has another entry in it that I also used to visit. And as a reminder, the go-to directory is a list of service stores or software stores in each state. And this one, I'm absolutely certain it's where I bought my RANA 1000 disk drive. This store is called Quality Technology. I think it may also be where I got my Star Gemini 10X printer. They had good software and hardware prices, if I recall correctly, and I know I got both of those at the same place. Next, more and more color is making it into the pages, and this issue seems to have more than any other so far. There are many full-color page ads, mainly for games, and article headers are also getting the color treatment on a regular basis as well. Next, Antic is still jumping around a lot with the articles. I've noticed many times there is a continued on next page at the bottom. Then it skips only one page to resume. And that one page in between is just a full-page ad. So why not just flip those around? Maybe someone from the magazine industry can explain that to me. And last, this has nothing to do with the magazine per se, but some of you may be wondering how I compute the equivalent prices today. This is probably long overdue. I don't think I've ever mentioned it on the podcast before. I use a site called Dollar Times, which has a handy inflation calculator. You plug in the amount, set the start and end year, and you get the adjusted value. There's a link to it in the show notes. As always, if you have any stories related to Antic Magazine or any first-hand experience with any of the products mentioned, I'd like to hear about it. My contact information is on the website, and if you're enjoying this podcast, please rate it on Apple's podcasts. I want to thank Zane Little for the track The Cool Factor from the album Another Bag of Chips, which is used in the opening sequence. I also want to thank you for continuing to listen and support. Thank you.